2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for participating and remind you to please mute your screens, and or if you're on off mute, to be sure you mute any electronic devices you may have with you today. Excuse me, I'm struggling with allergies, so if I may have to stop and cough every once in a while.
Today's snowmold is tough.
I know it. Today's meeting is a study and business session, with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either electronically or wave at us physically. Try to get our attention so that we know that you would like to address the commission. Please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. Would you please join Jenny in the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute?
Hello, I'm Jenny First Johnson, let's go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everybody. So I'm Jenny First Johnson. I'm the manager of Generation Asset Management. And I'm excited to present the safety minute today. And as we all know, our clocks jumped forward last weekend. And I don't know if you're anything like my family, but we're still struggling a little bit to get used to the new time difference. So March is National Sleep Awareness Month. Rebecca, if you could go forward. March is National Sleep Awareness Month. And so I thought I'd take this opportunity to talk a little bit about sleep health and some tips and things that we can do to improve our health this month. Next slide. Sleep is so important because it's essential for our general health and well-being, sleep deprivation over time can lead to some serious problems, fatigue, sleepiness during the day. Ultimately, that can contribute to decreased work performance, a lack of attention and concentration, memory problems, and ultimately chronic health problems such as depression, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and even type 2 diabetes. And when you're sleep deprived, you're at higher risk of accidents. It's said that if you are driving sleep deprived, it's sort of like driving intoxicated. So we really should be prioritizing our sleep health. Next slide. So some factors that negatively affect sleep health. Of course, daylight saving time. Next. Caffeine intake, especially caffeine consumed late in the day. Obesity, and some prescription and over-the-counter medications, alcohol, especially too much and too late in the day, smoking, and screen time, especially before bed. So what can you do to help improve your sleep health? Getting outside and being exposed to natural daylight during the day and during your waking hours. Making sure that your bedroom is comfortable and your bedding is comfortable and free of distractions. Getting exercise and moving your body, but not too late in the day, too close to bedtime. Limiting caffeine intake, especially in the afternoon. And eating regular meals, healthy meals, and making sure not to have a big meal too close to bedtime. And again, limiting that screen time, especially after dark and within an hour of bedtime. So there are specific considerations for those of us who work night shift, because that is directly in contrast to our circadian rhythms. So some things you can do: having bright lights at work, napping just before your shift, keeping a regular schedule even on the days off, and making sure your longest sleep is soon after you get home in a quiet, dark bedroom without distractions. And if you have regular sleepless nights, then please see a healthcare provider, especially if you think you may have something called sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome. A lot of these things can be managed, and sleep is so important that it definitely warrants a conversation with your provider. If you're curious about more things this month, more information and activities for National Sleep Awareness Month, or if you'd like to just learn more about sleep health, the National Sleep Foundation at nsf.org has a lot of information. Thank you, everyone, for having me, and hope you have a great day.
You're on mute, Steve.
Yep, thank you. Thanks, Jenny. Great presentation. And, you know, I agree with what you said. My wife and I invested in a nice bed that has electronic data on how well we sleep at night. And we've really worked on reducing the things that you talked about to get a better night's sleep and improve our health. And we've even turned it into kind of a competition. And unfortunately, my wife bests me every day with her scores. So anyway, thank you, Jenny. Any questions for Jenny?
Just a comment. Jenny, really nice presentation. A lot of work went into it. Good illustrations, nice slides, and well organized. Thank you very much. Very informative.
Thank you.
All right. Approval of the agenda. Commissioners, we've been presented an agenda. General Manager Kirk Hudson has recommended Resolution 14 for the consent agenda. For the public's information, items on the consent agenda are also subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commissioner. Commissioners, do I hear any other changes or additions to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I recommend that we follow the lead of our administration and move item 14 to the consent agenda.
Great. Anything else? Okay. Agenda stands as modified. All right. So let's move into agenda item number 3, CPO winner recognition. Kirk.
I've got two worthy CPO award winners this month. We'll start with, I'm going to start with Kevin Tony, and sorry, switched up on you there. Kevin is being recognized not just for a single event, but actually what Kevin does day in and day out when it comes to supporting safety at Chelan PUD. Kevin consistently puts his employees' safety first, and he really sets the tone for safety in his leadership role. Kevin's the Rock Island Maintenance Superintendent, and as you all know, there's a tremendous amount of work that's happening at Rock Island right now. All the upgrades, cranes, spillway testing work, and the modernization of the turbines and generators. It's just a tremendous amount of activity. But Kevin consistently creates an atmosphere that's very positive towards safety, and really pleased to have him with us, and like to make sure he gets recognized. And he got recognized not only within the generation and transmission side, but from the safety department as well, as his leadership for safety. So thank you, Kevin. I think he's online with us.
Thank you, Kirk. I appreciate the recognition. It was definitely unexpected, but thank you very much.
Yeah, this is Dan Garrison, Director of Hydro Operations. I just want to emphasize everything that Kirk said. It's been just a thrill to work with Kevin. He's only been here a few years, and we threw him into the lion's den down at Rock Island with all the activity down there. And I'm particularly grateful that this particular award came from outside of our own department. It came from safety, which really speaks volumes to me personally. And it's attributable to his positive attitude when it comes to safety. You know, it's so easy to get consumed with project schedules and deadlines, et cetera. But Kevin always finds a way to keep safety first and foremost and in a very positive manner. So thank you, Kevin. Well done.
Thank you, Dan. Great comments, Dan. Thank you. Kevin, it's great to have some wonderful words said about you, and we all appreciate your great efforts and promoting safety within, and thank you for your ongoing work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. Okay, our next award winner is Debbie Litchfield. Debbie was awarded the Cycle of Personal Ownership Award for modeling her focus on enhancing records management and retention. It's just one of many things Debbie's recognized for, and actually Debbie's taken on a tremendous effort and actually I think leading us all in terms of trying to get our arms around all the records we have and trying to put them in a place where they're easy to find digitally. And through her efforts, she's actually reduced over 1,000 inches of hard copy documents, and I think that when you add all that up, it amounts to about 6 stories high of paper. I did ask Debbie if that meant you could find the documents, and she assured me that we could find them with the reduction of paper. In fact, probably easier to find. So I really appreciate Debbie's efforts here, and as you all know, Debbie is actually leaving the district, retiring after a long career, dedicated service here to Chelan Piedi and its customer owners. So would like to say thank you to Debbie personally for the service she provides here, and I know others are on the line waiting to speak as well.
And maybe I could go next and follow Kirk's comments there, too, mentioning that Debbie will be retiring at the end of the month. And Debbie doesn't really like being in the spotlight, but I still wanted to take a minute to appreciate her dedication and accomplishments over the last 28 years here at the district. And I actually really wanted to mention two things that Debbie has done that illustrate her dedication to the district. And the first one was her focus on succession planning so that her staff had broad experience and were ready to compete to going to the next level as positions opened up. I think it's a hard thing to do to kind of train your potential successor and have that mental mindset of making sure that everyone's ready to compete. And Debbie did a really great job on leading by example for succession planning. And then as mentioned here with her CPO award, her focus on the process documentation of making sure that there's retrievable procedures and also cross-training of all staff so that the transition can be seamless was another area of focus for Debbie, and a really great example there because I already see the demonstration of that smooth transition. So Debbie, thank you for your dedication all these years, for everything that you've done. You clearly demonstrate your regard for the district and ensuring that it's just as good after you leave as it was while you're here with all your expertise. So congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you, Kirk, and also Kelly for the recognition and the kind words. I really appreciate that. after many years of collecting paper and electronic files and emails, it was clearly time to do some office house cleaning and focus records management. And I have to admit that when Kelly submitted the CPO and referenced six stories of an office building of paper reduction, I had to Google it because I thought there's just no way that that could possibly be the case. And had to do the calculation a few different times because I just really wasn't quite sure that that was right. But it was, in fact, six stories. So it seems impressive to me as well. With the paper reduction, clearly it has improved our electronic storage within the Treasury Group. The information is more easily accessible. It helps with efficiencies, retention, and also supporting the production that is supports that move to the new service center and transitioning these files to the to others in my retirement. And if I may, I'd like to share a few comments about my retirement. I kind of have some mixed emotions about all of this. I have 38 years in public service, 10 years at Wenatchee Valley College, and 28 years here at the PUD, so 38 in the retirement system. And it's time to look ahead and do something different. But as I reflect over my PUD years here, there have been some pretty memorable and impactful events and accomplishments. And it's been fun and exciting and sometimes wild and a nervous ride. But there's some things that I just kind of wanted to point out and share. My role as the treasurer at a very high level is includes the management of the debt and cash and investments. At a high point in 2020, we had over $670 million of cash. Since 2017, our cash balances have exceeded our debt balances, which is a pretty monumental thing. Having rates that have not been great on the investment side, but during my tenure, there have been over $270 million of investment income. And our goal of preservation of principal, safety of liquidity, have always been paramount in our processes with cash and investment management. On the debt side, I've led or participated in 49 series of bond issuances that totaled nearly $2 billion. We've also taken our outstanding bond levels from a high of over a billion in 2010 and reduced it by $630 million, or 60%, to a ending balance in 2021 of about $400 million. So some of these issuances were conducted during some pretty major financial crisis events that had occurred. In 2001, we started into a recession that was caused by the boom and subsequent bust of the dot-com business. And then later that year, we had the unfortunate 9/11 attacks that occurred. I recall Carol Wardell, prior legal counsel, and I were in New York and Washington, D.C. days before the attack. The attacks destroyed the World Trade Center towers where we previously had conducted our bond financing activities, and they closed the New York Stock Exchange. And when it had reopened, the Dow had dropped over 600 points, and the crisis threw the United States back into the 2000 recession, which extended until 2003. We were in the bond market issuing bonds in 2001, 2002, and 2003, so certainly some challenges with that. In 2008, we saw the financial crisis that started in 2007 with the subprime mortgage crisis. It drove insurance companies that we often look to insure our bonds to a AAA level into bankruptcy or with a serious degradation of their ratings, of their credit quality, which impacted the actions that we took. The Dow fell over 700 points, which was the worst in its worst one-day drop ever. The Fed stepped in to keep Bear Stearns and the insurer AIG afloat, but they couldn't help Lehman Brothers. And unfortunately, Lehman had their bankruptcy caused a global banking pandemic. And you may recall that Lehman had been the district's longtime investment banker since the early 1990s and a party to some of our financial contracts. So the impact was felt very close. And again, we were in the bond market in 2007, 2008. In 2009, so challenges with that. And then on a more recent perspective, in 2020, we had the pandemic that hit. The U.S. economy had contracted to a record 31% in the second quarter, after falling 5% the previous quarter. And in April of 2020, the U.S. lost about 20 million jobs, sending the unemployment rate skyrocketing. And the pandemic also caused the 2020 stock market crash. And in May 2020, we were in the bond market. So there were all very challenging and set unsettling times, but we were still able to successfully issue the bonds in the volatile bond market. And it was due to the strength and the credit quality of the district, which is evidenced by the legacy that you are all creating. So when I came into Treasury in 1996, our bond ratings were A and A+, and we worked hard over the years, strengthening the district, communicating our story to the bond rating agencies, and I'm proud that we're among the few utilities in the nation that are at the AA+. So certainly an accomplishment I'm very proud of. I was also part of the 2011-2012 power sale contract negotiation team that resulted in the contracts that we have with Puget, now COA. It was a transition process that took us from contracts that were much more of a take-or-pay concept, where basically it just paid for the cost. It required that we would bond for nearly all capital. And that caused us to have an increase in our debt levels over time. And under the new contracts, we do have more revenues that come in and help us to do pay-as-you-go capital, and that allows us to forego much of the debt and not have to incur that debt. And there's been many, many other events and accomplishments, and I want to thank the board for giving me the opportunity to serve as a treasurer for all of these years and to be on teams to help implement the strategic and financial plans that you've laid out and that have positioned the district so well for years still to come. So I really appreciate that. I also want to thank you, I'm going to get emotional here, for selecting Heather as the next treasurer. I have great confidence in her and that she brings over 16 years of experience from our treasury team here at the district. She's clearly demonstrated her expertise, her knowledge, her skill, and has taken on progressively more and more responsibilities, and she's just going to do a fantastic job. So I thank you for that. And it's been a great adventure. I've enjoyed my time here. And again, I want to thank you, commissioners, and the senior team for all that work that you have done, and I wish you all continued success. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Congratulations, Debbie.
Thank you.
So, Debbie, you are sitting here in front of several five retired commissioners, and we have all failed miserably at retirement at one point or another. So be prepared for that challenge to learn as you go. And my only advice is don't get sucked into, oh, Debbie, we can't live without you. We need you. Come back. I know that's not what Kelly wants to hear. But the truth of the matter is you've served very, very well, as obvious as you've shared the history here. And now it's time for you to expand, to reinvent yourself, learn, go for an elected office, join a board, do something that really you deserve now. And we just wish you the best. Retirement is wonderful, and we wish you very well, and thank you for your years and years of leadership and service. Commissioners? Anybody else?
Oh, yes. I'm just waiting for others. But so, Debbie, you know, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you and Kelly were both on the rating agency trip to New York that I went on many years ago.
Yes.
And that was the first place I really got to know you. And I was so impressed with the professional approach that our district was taking. And I think the office we were in was overlooking the then being built 9/11 Memorial. And I was not aware that you were in New York just a few days before that. That has to have had an impact, a lifelong impact on you. I understand that. But on a more serious note, I wanting to go back to the CPO, when you condense that 1,000 inches of paper, have you fully accomplished your goals here and gotten Kelly's desk cleaned up?
The short answer is no, and I'm sure there's hope there. So sorry, Kelly.
That's all right. I'm taking personal responsibility for that, and I will accomplish that also. Debbie set the example.
I just want you to know Kelly's desk is worth 1,000 inches of score.
I can't let this go away.
So thank you so much, Debbie, for everything you've done. We will miss you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Debbie, let me take just a minute to do a little bit of a back in the day. Ann's been on the commission 18 years, Randy and I now in our 60s. And we remember coming through the door as rookies, and things were pretty unsettled at that point. And we're kind of looking for places of stability, soundness, and wisdom. And I think all three of us at some forum, some time, ran in opposition to the debt and how it was structured. And as time evolved, Kelly's leadership, your leadership in working with John Janey, have positioned the PUD differently than I ever anticipated that we would be. Earlier in your presentation, you talked about where we are in relationship to debt and our investments, et cetera. Incredible track record. And I know it's been a team, and you guys have worked well together. But it wasn't easy. And but there's a grateful public out there, whether they realize it or not. When you look at the financial stability of Chelan County PUD, it rests on the shoulders of really, really good employees who have been dedicated. And it's been a pleasure to work with you and Kelly, with you and your team, and to see where we were and where we are and the direction that we're headed. Thanks for that effort. It doesn't happen easily, but it happened only because of good people. So thank you all. And Debbie, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Very kind.
If I can, I'd like to just take a moment and share some history with Debbie. I knew Debbie before becoming a commissioner in my capacity in the investments and in the bond business. And on a few occasions, I've reached out to Debbie and had questions for her about specific Chelan PUD bond issues, also on upcoming new issues that Chelan PUD was going to be involved in. I would come to Debbie with hat in hand, asking to be a part of that. And the reason is quite clear, really, and it's because of the quality job that Debbie and others, and including Kelly, have done in positioning Chelan PUD to really be the envy of utility companies across the nation. And it was an easy objective sale for me when I would talk with clients, whether they were banks or corporations or whether they were individuals that were looking for tax-exempt debt. Chelan PUD was a slam dunk, and it was all because of the hard work and the effort that Debbie and others have put into really creating a world-class, top credit-rated organization. So even before becoming a commissioner, I knew that this organization was second to none. And it was much to the efforts of Kelly and Debbie and others within the Treasury Department. So just understand that your reputation is not just known here at the district. It is well known out on Wall Street for the quality that you have brought to this district. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Very kind.
All right. Well, Debbie, that's those are some great. Oh, there's Ann. Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll jump in. And I'll be short, Debbie. No history here, but I just want to say, first of all, congratulations on your CPO recognition. And that is absolutely well deserved. We could probably hand that to you once a month, and it would be deserved. And I just want to thank you for your steadfast leadership, your professionalism for all of my 18 years. And I guess more than anything else, I want to thank you for your kindness and patience and educating commissioners. At least I'll speak for myself, educating me. Dennis and I were kind of giggling the other day about when we first became commissioners and we're looking at the or we're presented with the Alcoa contract, and we were kind of laughing at, we weren't laughing, but we were commenting about how we just had so much to learn. And you were patient and kind and really a joy to work with. So I wish you the best. I know you're going to love retirement. I know you you're a person that accomplishes things and does things. And so I suspect you'll have lots of people wanting, as Steve said, lots of people asking you to be on their board and help them out. So we're grateful you're in the community, and we'll stick around. Thanks again.
Thanks, Ann.
I really appreciate all the nice comments. It's been wonderful to work here and work with all of you, so thank you.
Great. Thank you, Debbie. And, again, congratulations to Kevin as well. So we'll move on to item number four and go through our legislative session wrap-up with Tracy M.
Good morning, everybody, commissioners. Okay, I'm going to give a little wrap-up, and then we have a lot more work to do. This is just the end of the session summary, and want to introduce what we might see again in 2023. No information. This is information only, no decisions. Okay, since we last met, we've had the end of session on March 10th, and then we have 20 days for the governor to sign or veto legislation. So on the budget, there's a lot still that we're going to be learning on the budget. I just want to touch on some of the high points. Utility arrearages we did support. Ended up $100 million was included in the budget. Some of the money did come from the Public Works Assistance Account. MOTCA, Model Toxics Act, was not used. Snake River Dam study funding we opposed. It did pass in both budgets, and some more details will be coming on that. We'll keep you posted. Broadband funding, and then I think we're actually going to be touching on some broadband topics as part of manager's item. But both versions passed. Both versions of the capital budget provide broadband funding. Transportation revenue, again, this was a little interesting. The transportation was partially funded with the $57 million from the Public Works Assistance Account. That's down from the original estimate of a $1.6 billion. It was also partially funded from operations, the operations budget, which Dave Arbaugh shared that that's the first time he could recall that actually happening. So a little unique situation here. So, again, there's more details to come, but at a high level, $25 million to incent buyers to go with electric vehicles, $69 million for Commerce to work on getting charging infrastructure in rural areas, $3 million for EV supply equipment at state facilities, and $120 million for a newly created EV incentive account for programs to promote conversion to alternative fuels. And again, I'm putting a TBD here. Like I said, I think there was the budget was 800 and some pages, and we're still going through it and assessing what all this means for us. But clearly a lot of money being pumped into EV funding. Some of the top legislative priorities, wildfire liability that started out as a really bad place for utilities. We ended up getting into a position of support where they were going to be doing some studying and some additional work, but eventually that died on the House floor, and I do expect to see that again, and we'll cover that in a minute. Water power license fees, this is deferring the sunset to 2029, and essentially we'd like to have sunset defer so that utilities like ourselves can continue to provide input to the agencies on the services essentially that we provide or that we are provided by the state, so we can there's some accountability to the support we receive. Then the net ecological gain, this passed, essentially turned into a study where the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is required to assess how to incorporate net ecological gain standard into the state land use, development, and environmental laws and rules. Again, and this is to improve statewide performance on endangered species recovery. So we'll be following up when we see the study, and I'm sure there will be subsequent actions there. Hydrogen SB 5910 passed, creating a definition for green hydrogen that aligns with the CETA, and also makes Washington one of the federally designated hydrogen hubs with state funding support. Telecom, Public Works grant, Public Work Board grants and loans support. This is 1673 passed, and this created a pre-application process to identify, help applicants identify barriers that they may be faced with in seeking and obtaining grants and loans. Paid family medical leave changes. This primarily was to ensure the financial stability of the program, and we supported it, and it's awaiting governor's action. So in 2023, the crystal ball right now is that wildfire will begin again be a topic. The sponsor this last session is open to working with utilities, and so we will be assessing interests, working with other utilities to determine if there's something we would like to pursue in the interim relative to wildfire. A net ecological gain. Our interests are to make sure that whatever happens with the concept of net ecological gain, that they align with our existing natural resource programs, and so we will be monitoring that closely. And then finally, excuse me, building energy use, which is a very high interest to the governor. We'll be looking at that closely to see how that might fit with, or the governor's interest might fit with our programs, and how that topic building energy use might fit with other programs that are of importance to us with respect to other energy programs, Clean Energy Transformation Act, and other things. But this building energy use is going to come back, and so we will be monitoring that closely. As you know, Sean was got us through most of the session. Dave stepped up. He was unable to join us today. Dave Arbaugh stepped up, helped us through the end of the session. and we expect to have Sean's replacement in place shortly and be prepared to work through the legislative session interim and be ready for next year. So with that, curious if anybody has any questions.
Commissioners, anything for Sean?
Tracy.
I knew what you meant.
Tracy, sorry.
No problem.
I would like to thank Tracy. I know there was this gap here, and Tracy actually helped out a lot during that gap with Sean retiring. So thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Always good to see a session come to end.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. Okay, we're on to item number 5, District Investment and Banking Policy Update.
We've got Sarah Hale with us from Treasury to present this.
Yes, good morning. Can you guys all hear me?
Yep, we can hear you fine, Sarah.
Okay.
You might want to actually speak up just a little bit.
Okay.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm here to present the proposed changes for our Investment and Banking Policy Resolution. Next slide, please. Just for your information, this is information only. There is no action that we are requesting today. The district's investment and banking policy resolution requires an annual review with any modifications approved by the board. The comprehensive review is complete for 2022, yet an improvement opportunity was identified and results in these proposed changes I have for you today. The improvement opportunity is to delegate the approval process for changes to banks, signers, and initiators from the board to the treasurer and CFO jointly. The new process would provide notification of changes to the board during the quarterly investment reporting process, and this will provide efficiency with no additional risks. Next slide, please. Currently, when a staffing change occurs that impacts banking and investment signers, these changes may not be immediately presented to the board for approval. Staff has tried to balance the need for additional signers while being aware of the board and the staff's limited time. However, this can lead to delays in adding new staff as signers, which can increase the challenges of ensuring that there are adequate approved signers to transact daily district business. For example, routine personnel turnover may result in new payroll, internal audit, and finance staff at different times during a calendar year. But it would not be optional for us to present 3 separate resolutions to the board. This change will create administrative efficiencies for the board and senior management team and reflect banking and staffing changes more timely for better departmental support and coverage of work tasks. The district staff has reviewed the current resolution and recommends modernizing the current practice of requiring board approval of changes of banks, signers, and initiators. While board approval will no longer be required, the board will still be informed of changes as a part of the existing quarterly investment reporting process. Further, this policy will continue to ensure signer changes require joint approval and not create new or additional risks, and is supported by the district's internal auditor. Next slide, please. The resolution to delegate the authority to the treasurer and CFO for updating banks, signers, and initiators will be available for your approval at the next board meeting on April 4th. The red line of draft of this resolution was included in the board packet. We will have a couple of refinements for clarity around the board reporting process. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? So I think we're looking for just a head nod that they're moving in the right direction, appreciate the work, and to continue on, and we'll see you back in April.
Yeah, we're just looking for an indication that we're on the right track, and then we would bring back the resolution.
Looks like you have it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Kirk, I will turn this over to you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is Rate Schedule 35 to Rate Schedule 36 transition with Lindsay Mons and Eric Walquist. Lindsay's here in the boardroom with us.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rebecca is
good morning.
Getting the screen ready. There we go. Yes, so as Kirk mentioned, I'm here to talk about Rate 35 to Rate 36 transition. Today's presentation is really to talk about or respond to a request that customers have made for a transition plan. So staff was requested to develop some options for the board's consideration, and we would really appreciate your direction today. Just as a little bit of background and reminder of where we've been, back in July of 2016, we adopted Rate Schedule 35, which is our high-density load, and that was effective in January of 2017. And this was for those loads that were creating a significant impact on our systems, both from an infrastructure perspective and an energy perspective. These were the loads that were using a significant amount of power compared to the services that they were occupying. When we adopted that rate schedule, we had been under a moratorium for what turns out to be quite some period of time, a year and a half at that point. And so there were several customers that had been operating prior to establishing that moratorium and that rate schedule. So in December of 2016, we established some transition contracts that took those previous customers from the rate schedules that they were previously paying and planned to transition them in on a fairly smooth ramping plan to rate 35, and then at the conclusion of those contracts to whichever rate schedule was in place at the time. During that same period of time, we saw a significant increase in the price of Bitcoins. We saw a spike in December of 2017, which led to a significant increase in requests for service from the district, and we had a second round of moratoriums put in place specifically on cryptocurrency customers in March of 2018, which led to a new rate adopted in December of 2018 with an effective date of April 1st, 2019, and that's our rate schedule 36, which is our cryptocurrency rate schedule. Specific to those customers who were coming in, we saw a significant, and when I say significant, increase in load, it was more than double our existing retail load with requests for cryptocurrency service. So instead of the ability to serve those customers with our regular generation, we were looking at purchasing market power. So that cryptocurrency rate schedule is tied to market rates. And then most recently, here in January of 2021, was the completion of those transition contracts. And January 1st, those customers were transitioned to their rate schedule 36. The request from customers was for consideration of whether we could have a new transition plan from rate schedule 35 to the new rate schedule 36. A little bit more detail on the difference between these rates, and these are the rates as of June 1st of 2022. That is the next date of the regular board transition or board rate plan that was put in place as part of the strategic plan. So just for an ease of comparison, we use that June 1st date on these. For Rate Schedule 35, the HDL, and Rate Schedule 36, cryptocurrency, they both have the same basic charge and demand charge. As a reminder, that basic charge is associated with being a customer, so the costs that we have for each customer, the billing, collections, metering, those types of things. So those are the same for both rate classes. And the demand charge, which is associated with the transmission and distribution delivery system, the infrastructure there, the same demand charge, And I'd also note the same upfront capital charge for both rate schedules. The difference between the two really is in the energy charge. So for rate schedule 35, the energy charge here is our cost of production on our system. And then for rate 36, it's an annually adjusted market rate based on what the forward market looks like as of December 15th. So that is set each year at that time and then effective April 1st of the following. So currently our market rate is about 5.64 cents per kilowatt hour, and on April 1st, it's scheduled to increase to 7.89 cents per kilowatt hour. The bottom line of this table is what we consider the approximate effective rate. So looking at the various customers in these rate schedules and taking each of these three charges and then creating a standard rate that includes all three of them for ease of comparability. So the rest of this presentation, I'll be talking in effective rates. So the effective rate of rate schedule 35 is about 3.85 cents per kilowatt hour, and the effective rate of schedule 36 is about 8.8 cents per kilowatt hour. I'll pause there if there are any questions from the board before I move on. All right. So as I mentioned, the request really is to have some sort of a transition for those customers that are experiencing this change from the 3.85 cents to the 8.8 cents. So some transition options. Of course, we always have our primary option of no change, continuing with the rate contracts the way they are currently written. Or per the request for this presentation, we have some transition options here. Really, it looks like a lot of options, but there are really two approaches here. One, each of these has an option with a number and then the letter A. Those A letter options are to roll back the rate to the Schedule 35 rate and then have a smooth transition over the remaining time period of the transition contract. And the option Bs are to start in June immediately with an increase from rate 35 to a portion of rate 36 smoothly throughout the whole time. So, and then with three different time period options of a 3-year, 2-year, or a 1-year transition. When we look at these transition options with those effective rates, where we combine all of the different elements of the rate schedule, the Schedule 35, as I mentioned, for 2022 is about 3.85 cents a kilowatt hour. The next line there in green is the Schedule 36 at 8.8. And then the transition options, as you'll see, all the option A's go back to that 3.85 cents a kilowatt hour in 2022. For a 1-year period and then start increasing thereafter. And then the option Bs have a higher rate, but not as high as the Schedule 36 rate right away in the first year and then smoothly through the rest of the time period. The effective rates that you just saw on that previous slide assumed a contract adjustment on June 1st with our other rate plans. Taking those views and into an annual impact, it shifts slightly because we have a half a year in 2022, a full year in 23, a full year in 24, and then for those 3-year options, a half a year again in 2025. Looking at the district's potential lost revenue here or revenue impact, budget impacts, where we compare the transition option to the Schedule 36 option. The most costly for the district is the option 1A, which is the 3-year transition where we start at Schedule 35, and then with decreasing cost as the transition periods are shorter. All of these impacts assume that the market rate would stay the same in 23, 24, 25. In reality, the contract and the rate itself change annually, as I mentioned. Looking back at 2 weeks ago, the presentation from Energy Resources, it looks like our forward market curve is anticipated to stay high. It could increase even another 5 or 10% in those future years, which would make this impact even greater. So that really is a summary of those transition options. I know it's a lot of information, a very quick presentation, so I'm happy to go back and explain more on any of these numbers or options if the board wishes.
I think just to add a couple things here, just to really appreciate the work the team has put into this to try and be responsive to the customer's requests, and I think there's two questions at hand here. One of those is, would the board be interested in the deferral of the market-based component of the rate from April 1 to June 1? And the second one would be whether there's some options here on this slide that you have in front of you that you'd like us to consider working with the customers through and potentially bringing back for decisions on.
Yeah, and Kirk jumped ahead of me one slide, and so that's okay, but I'll I'll complete that thought for the board so that you're aware. With transition options, we've also been requested to consider some relief for these customers. Of course, the board knows we can't look back and adjust billing. However, we can look forward. So we have some options for immediate relief to these customers, one of those being, as Kirk mentioned, to defer the increase in market rate for Rate 36 customers from April 1st to June 1st. This would change the forthcoming rate adjustment, the current 5.64 cents a kilowatt hour in the actual energy rate component, instead of increasing it to the 7.89 cents, keep it there at 5.4. So we have the option to do that if the board wishes. And then we also have other options such as providing service at rate 35 as soon as a contract is signed. If we are going to go to transition contracts, those types of things. So there are options for immediate relief with the contracts proposed to go in place June 1st. So it's a little more background there on Kirk's comments.
Thanks, Lindsay.
You're welcome.
So I think I, just speaking for myself, I would be open to deferring the increase in the market rate till June. Would be willing, open to an option, but no longer than 2 years, and probably would like to hear from those customers making the request whether option A or B would work better for them, but no more than 2 years. So, commissioners, what are your thoughts? I've shared mine.
Oh, Steve, I'll jump in here. I actually do not have the options in front of me. I kind of got stuck here in Pullman, and I do not have my PUD laptop, but I've looked it over so many times, I think I know. First of all, I agree with you. I would support deferring the increase from April 1 to June 1 for several different reasons. And then as far as the transition contract goes, I, after much thought and, you know, lots of help between Kirk and Lindsay, I would support a two-year transition commencing on June 1 of 22.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Gary?
Thank you, Steve. I've had the opportunity to look the details over, and I would support a moving from an April to a June implementation date, if that makes sense. and give staff time to really vet all of the options with respect to transition. I would also be supportive of a two-year extension, really nothing longer than that. And of the two-year options of A and B, I would favor 2B as my first choice among the two-year choices. So thank you. That's my option.
Steve, let me just tell you, that helped me. 2B is what I support as well, because I didn't have the 2A and 2B in front of me. But thanks, Gary. That's what I'm calling it as well, 2B.
Thank you, Ann. Any other questions or feedback?
So looking at all the options, I think we're finding some alignment here, because I think the deferring the adjustment to June makes a lot of sense, if all the circumstances surrounding this. And the 2B, it feels like the right option to me also.
Thank you, Randy.
Concur.
All right. Kirk, does that...
Yeah, I believe
the indication where we're at.
Yeah, very helpful. And
would you be looking for a motion at this time?
Yep. I believe next. We can put it up on the screen here. So yes, very helpful. Should be able to see it on the screen there.
I'd be happy to make the motion, but I'm not able to see it. So I'd be more than happy to second it.
Steve, I've got the motion in front of me. I could make it if you would like.
Go ahead, Randy.
I would move to defer the annual adjustment of the rate Schedule 36 market energy charge to June 1, 2022, in order to allow time for resolution of customer requests regarding Rate 36 without compounding the interim impact to customers.
And we'll have Ann second that.
Yes, I'll second the motion.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion? Commissioners, all of you in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thanks, thank Lindsay, you. For all your work.
Thank you. So going forward,
yes,
next steps.
You.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, we do have one more.
A lot of work.
We do have one more slide, I think, with the next steps, if you wanted to go through that.
We probably don't even need to pull the PowerPoint up, but okay. Yeah, our next steps will continue to build those customers with the approved change today. We'll be back at the next regularly scheduled board meeting with a resolution, I believe, to ratify that change in the rate schedule. We'll provide some outreach to those Rate 36 customers of that deferral and collect comments as well if they have any regarding the contract potential. So move forward from there. Thank you.
Okay. Kirk, anything else on that?
Nope. Thank you very much for the direction.
Okay, at this time, do we have any comments from the public regarding that issue? Just want to open that up and one more time. And Rebecca, I will also open it up to any comments from any other public regarding any other items. As we're ending our study session. Okay, with nothing said there, we will let's talk a minute about our business session, going ahead and moving forward with our consent agenda and our regular resolution approvals. Kirk, looks like we could we could probably get through consent and regular resolutions at this time. Is that your take?
Yeah, I think we can. We are prepared. We do have our team online ready to tackle those.
Okay, so let's go ahead. Commissioners, everybody okay with that moving forward? Okay, let's move on into the consent agenda. Do I have a motion for approval for our consent agenda?
I move we accept the consent agenda with the addition of item 14.
14.
Okay. And I'll second that.
Thank you, Gary. Any discussion on that? Okay. Commissioners, all those in favor of the consent agenda, including item number 14, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Kurt, let's move into item 11 on the regular agenda.
Okay, thank you. Agenda item 11 is a resolution ratifying field work orders number D19 through D23 to contract 18-33 for the Rocky Reach Hydroelectric Support Facility Improvements Project with Leidig Construction of Spokane Valley, Washington. And with us is Casey Hall.
Good morning.
Good morning, Casey.
Morning, Casey.
So I'll give you a little background on this resolution. On September 8th of 2020, the board signed resolution 20-14482, authorizing GMP2 of the Rocky Reach Discovery Center and central maintenance projects with Leidig Construction. The total contract price in this resolution was $36,951,232.54. On September 7th of 2021, the Commission ratified field work order change orders numbers C1, D1 through D16, and approved two field work order change orders, D17 and D18. A budget revision was also approved, which was for the existing shop roof replacement, building CM17. So since then, we've had five field work order change orders issued in the amount of $448,152, bringing the total contract price to $38,513,115. So to talk about the changes that are in this resolution, majority of the changes are related to the completeness of the design and tank preparing the guaranteed maximum price cost estimate. So one of the underlying philosophies with DCCM contracting is we start construction before the design is 100% complete. It's very close to 100%, but there's still some things that need to be ironed out in the design. That's why when we go into with the GMP estimate, we have an owner and contractor's contingency to cover those gaps. That's what the majority of these changes have been for this resolution that you're looking at today. We also had the other large dollar value in this resolution, and these change orders have been for owner purchase contractor installed equipment. So under the contract, we're allowed to have the contractor purchase this equipment, which we have them purchase three large pieces. One was a glass cabinet for CM22 shop building, and then we've also purchased a new nitrox generator for the dive crews for their bottle, their makeup air for diving, and also purchased the tool room shelving for CM22. So talking about the overall budget for the project, these changes that are within this resolution are covered underneath the total project budget, and we're still tracking on budget for the project. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions for Casey? So Casey, it's good to drive by and see that roof going on central maintenance, the old maintenance building. And so that's good to see. The other question that I have maybe for Kirk is, as we see the progress being made, it makes me think of the older buildings that we have. And as an old school guy that's made new buildings and fought off the desire to, you know, bring in the old stuff into the new buildings and use old buildings, and, you know, which is a great thing to be penny conscience, but there's some point things we need to stop investing money into old buildings. And I'm just curious what I'd like to see an overall plan of all the buildings that we're replacing, or which ones we're keeping, what we're investing, like we did with the maintenance building, the new, you know, upgrading that building. And maybe it's time to have an update on that sometime in the future. And I'd like to find out which buildings are slated that we are going to be replaced. So,
yeah.
Is that possible?
Yep, indeed. In fact, it's on our parking lot of delegated follow-up items, and we actually have a commitment there to bring that back to the board here by the end of the second quarter of this year in terms of what we see as the future of those older buildings, if there is a future.
Great. Thank you for reminding me of that. So, Casey, thank you very much. Commissioners, anything else on 11?
Yeah. If anybody's interested to come out, I mean, we're operating out of our DCM22 shop and the new proof or the new office building. So, you know, Kirk, if anybody wants to come out and do a tour, we'd be happy to, the project team would be happy to give any of the commissioners a tour if they're interested.
I would. I'd like to see some of those new machines that staff are going to be using, what's been upgraded. So I would enjoy that.
Yeah, I was out there last week with Casey, and it's worth a visit if you're able to do it. It's definitely worth a visit.
Okay. Commissioners, if anybody else wants to do that, get a hold of Kirk, please. Okay, let's go on to resolution number 12.
Okay. Agenda item 12 is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement number 22-12204 related to the management of Arondo River Park with Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. And with us is Michelle Smith.
Thank you, Kirk. And good morning, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing and Compliance. So this is a resolution to approve an interlocal between the PUD and the Port Authority for a new lease and operating agreement for Arondo River Park. I'd like to take just a quick step back to provide a brief reminder related to the evolution of this agreement. It was actually back in 2017 that the district and the Port of Douglas County at that time started discussions to update a 1979 lease and operating agreement for Arondo River Park. And the park is a recreation facility within our FERC license for the Rocky Reach project. The PUD owns about 1.5 acres of the 5-acre park, and the Port Authority owns the other 3.5 acres. And then starting in 2018, while we continue to discuss a long-term new lease and operating agreement, we began some annual O&M management agreements for day use operation of the park, whereby the port continued to oversee the operation and maintenance, and we contributed up to about $25,000 towards that O&M. And then on November 1st of last year, our parks superintendent, Ryan Baker, provided the board with an overview of the anticipated early terms for an agreement that we had talked and were close to reaching an agreement with the now combined Chelan and Douglas port authorities. They are now the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. And he provided you kind of an early glimpse at some of the terms that we had come to agreement on, and let you know that once we finalized the agreement, we would come back to you. So we've finished that work. We now feel like we have a good agreement for a longer-term O&M arrangement for the Arondo River Park. And the new lease and operating agreement outlines the Port Authority's lease of PUD-owned property and for the O&M. And some of those terms include, it's basically a 10-year term beginning April 1st of this year with 5-year renewals thereafter. The Port Authority will manage and operate the park and be responsible for the costs and expenses. The PUD will reimburse the Port Authority for O&M on PUD-owned property up to $30,750 per year, including annual adjustments for inflation. The Port Authority will prepare an annual management plan, which will be discussed and agreed upon with PUD staff each year. And then the Port Authority will use only use grant funding for future infrastructure enhancements on property that they own due to the challenges of those kinds of grant encumbrances typically on our federally, you know, with our federal license. So that's basically a summary and the of the resolution and the agreement.
Question? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious. Is the you know, when we started down this path a few years ago, that park was heavily used for overnight campers, and there was a shift in the use of that to a day use only. Is that going to be part of the arrangement?
Yes, that's a great question. The park is currently not really set up well for overnight camping. The camping is a great source of revenue, though, right? So it does help bring income for the operator of that park, and we realize that. Unless some changes are made to the park, let's put it that way, I think in terms of bringing back camping is still a question to be determined. I'm hoping that maybe Ryan Baker is on the line and can add more to that. He's been more deeply engaged in discussions about future conditions of the park. And Ryan, do you happen to be on the line to add anything further? Okay,
not
hearing
seeing
that long
him.
Silence, he might not be on the phone. To my knowledge, Commissioner, we are not considering camping at this time. It's not built into the O&M agreement. However, I imagine that park will continue to evolve. Currently, it's not set up well for camping, so there would need to be some fairly substantial changes made to provide camping in that park. So it's planned to stay as day use currently.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners?
Steve, I have a question.
Oh, let's go with Ann. Carrie, I'll come back to you. Go ahead,
either
Ann.
Way. Okay. Okay, thanks. Michelle, hi, this is Ann. We did a survey, might have been 2 years ago now, maybe more. We surveyed, I don't know if we surveyed all our customers or maybe we did an open house with the local folks around the Arondo area and maybe just did an informal survey of what they wanted to see us do with the park. Am I right? We did something, didn't we?
You are exactly right. Yes, we had both. We did a survey, online survey, and we also did an open house at Arondo.
That's right. Yeah, I was at that open house. And I'm trying to remember what the general feeling was about camping at the park. I know we have a lot of outsiders come in and large parties who use that park. And I think maybe the local people felt like It wasn't always available for their use because it was filled up with large parties. Do I remember that correctly?
You have a good memory, yes. What we heard from those surveys was that generally the local area preferred the day use for the ability to access the river and to use it as a day use park, whereas the camping was used typically more by outside groups, usually kind of large groups, but typically from outside the area. That's correct.
Okay, that's what I thought. Thanks, Michelle.
Michelle, I had a question, and again, I'm trying to reach into my memory banks here, and could be completely off, but it seems to me, with respect to Randy's question and the camping, that there was some significant electrical problems with it being underbuilt to accommodate the modern campers' needs, and that represented a fairly significant cost. And if I understand correctly, you were saying that any major projects the port would look for grant money. Is that correct? So I'm assuming that the two would have to be, the port would be looking for grant money should they choose to try to do something about camping and upgrading the facilities. Is that right?
I hate to speak on behalf of the Port Authority. I'm not quite sure where they might be on this, so I hate to speak for them. But what I do know is that, you know, the discussions we've had over the past several years about camping, and when we actually did quite a bit of research around that park in 2017 and 18, the camping that came, after 1979, the camping was added because the park, which was originally set up to be day use, it was originally built for day use. So the camping was added, not as an afterthought, but it came later without any without the infrastructure to really accommodate it. And I think that realization and the toll that it's taken on the park and the amount of effort to bring that park up to date, just, with water and the restrooms and the, all those things that a campground needs, would be pretty substantial. And, we would have to then try and decide what's the balance between the day use versus the areas being used for camping. So at this point, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about bringing the camping back into the park. And that's where I'm struggling a little bit to answer the question. I think the Port Authority and the PUD recognize the benefit of that area as a day use area. The Port Authority certainly has the ability to seek grant funding, especially for the boat launch and some of those other facilities that are on their property. They have the ability to go get some funding should they choose. I'm not sure, exactly what their plans are at this point. There has been quite a bit of money that has gone into the park, both by the port and the PUD, even over the last several years. And that's why I was kind of hoping Ryan was going to be on, because he was planning to give you the things that have been updated. But there has been quite a bit of updating going on just in the last 2 to 3 years. But again, it's mainly been geared towards the day use nature of that park and making sure that it will be safe for park users and enjoyable for them. So that's where the focus is today.
Thank you, Michelle. And I really asked my question incorrectly, and I apologize. It really had more to do with major repairs and improvements to the park rather than just camping. At one point, I understood that the restroom was closed and it would need repair in order to reopen. So it was those types of questions with respect to the current status. And do you know if the restrooms have been repaired and are back open?
Well, I know that the park is due to open April 1st, so I have to make the assumption that the port and the PUD it would not be opening on April 1st unless those repairs were made and we all felt that it was safe to be opened. So I'm going to guess and jump to the conclusion that yes, it's has been deemed or will be deemed ready to open on April 1st.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Michelle.
You're welcome.
You know, I know a lot of work has gone into this over time, and so it's nice to see final agreement coming together with the board, and appreciate everybody's efforts.
Thank you very much, and I'll pass that along to Ryan Baker. He's been carrying the torch on this one and involved in those discussions with the board, and they've been really, really great to work with. We've really enjoyed working with the Port Authority on this.
Great. All right. With no other comments or questions, we'll move on to item number 13. Kurt?
Item 13 is a resolution rejecting the bid of Apollo Sheet Metal Incorporated, doing business as Apollo Mechanical Contractors, and authorizing Lake Chelan HVAC upgrade to be obtained by negotiations. With us is George Velasquez.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, everyone. Due to the receipt of no responsive bids, the project team recommends rejecting the bid received from Apollo and allowing staff to obtain Lake Chelan HVAC system by negotiation. A little bit of background on this one. Lake Chelan Hydro has been operating the breaker gallery and the battery rooms at temperatures exceeding optimal operation of equipment. Heating studies were completed in 2020 and 2021 to better understand the current operating temperatures in those facilities. It was determined that the existing HVAC systems were not adequate and needed to be replaced. Stantec design engineers complete the HVAC design and also the unit designs and loading. In order for the powerhouse breaker gallery systems and the battery room to operate efficiently, a new system is included, needs to be included, and it includes three rooftop units, all associated ducting, and a fan in the battery room to allow those systems to work efficiently. The existing equipment will have a longer expected life. When breaker equipment and battery equipment run at their upward temperature limits, they tend to degrade and potentially cause damage. In 2021, the outdoor ambient temperatures reached about 116 degrees, if everybody recalls that, and it took a little bit of a toll on some of that equipment. The system currently has only one undersized rooftop unit, and that unit's been in operation since 1990s, and it's time to upgrade that system as well. So in order to maintain the district's culture of operational excellence and comply with equipment temperature operating ranges, it is recommended to reject and obtain by negotiation. Any questions?
Any questions, commissioners? All right. George, thank you very much. Oh, here we go.
I have one. George, what is, do you have any kind of an estimate between what our engineers felt we needed to pay for that and what the negotiated price may be? Do you know any idea what that range is?
Yes. So we were fortunate enough to have two proposals before we went out to bid. We wanted to get a industry test on what it would cost us, and it was between $250,000 and $350,000. The bid we received from Apollo was roughly $430,000, but as I mentioned, they were also non-responsive. They didn't include about four or five items that were required in the bid package. So I think through negotiation, you're looking around that range.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else, commissioners? Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, we have resolution 11, 12, and 13. Do I have a motion for approval on those?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 11, 12, and 13 as presented.
And I'll second that.
Thank you, Randy. It's been seconded, moved and seconded. Do we have any further discussion on those three resolutions? Commissioners, all those in favor of resolution 11, 12, and 13 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, Kirk, it is 11:31. You want to move into manager items?
That'd be great. I've got a couple of those for you. First one, we have Heather Ireland joining us, and she's going to give us a bond rating update. Heather?
Well, and if I could jump in a moment before Heather starts. We're really in the flow today because as we recognize Debbie's retirement this morning, we now have the opportunity to welcome Heather for the first time in her new role as treasurer. So, yeah, we detailed her treasury experience and MBA training when the board approved her as treasurer in February. And Heather formally began to serve as treasurer on February 28th. And has a month of training and mentorship with Debbie. So the transition has been smooth and beneficial and seamless. So Heather is here today to share one of our first examples of the smooth transition. So welcome, Heather, and it's to you.
Thank you, Kelly. I do have some good news to share with the board this morning. We went through a periodic review process beginning back in February with one of the district's rating agencies. And again, we use a variety of rating agencies to review the district's credit quality and offer their opinion of the security that the bonds can offer to investors. The rating agency we met with in February was Fitch Ratings. That was with Kirk, Kelly, Debbie, and myself, and we were able to provide them updates about the district's 2021 financial results, our overall financial condition, as well as key operating issues. The review went very well, and I'm very excited to report that Fitch has affirmed the district's bond ratings at a AA+ level, continuing to put the district in the highest levels in the nation for utility. A few of the key points that Fitch pointed out in their review. Some of our strengths that they wanted to highlight was the district's valuable hydro generating assets, as well as our extremely low cost power production. They also noted our solid revenue defensibility from our power sales strategies that allow us to hedge price and hydrology risk, as well as mitigate counterparty risks. They pointed to our strong retail rate flexibility, with the board having the independent ability to adjust those rates, and those rates being among the lowest in the nation. They also noted our low debt leverage and strong cash reserves, the combination of the two supporting a very healthy financial profile, and the anticipation that even under the stress scenarios that Fitch creates and reviews, that we would maintain very healthy and strong from a financial standpoint through those stress scenarios. They also looked at various environmental, social, and governance issues, so ESG factors. They assign a relevance score to the district based on their view of how relevant those ESG factors are to the district's credit. Their factor review indicated that those items were either minimally or credit neutral impact for relevance on the district. And that was just because of the nature of the factors or the district's management of the factors. So good result there as well. So overall, again, that did result in Fitch affirming our credit ratings at a AA+, which really is only possible because of the efforts of the entire district as an organization. It starts at the board level with the strong financial policies and decision-making to support those, as well as senior management team and every staff member consistently contributing to those plans. It's kind of nice, my privilege as the communicator of the district's information. It's a good thing, and it's a good to be the messenger in this case, because we get to share the district story with the rating agencies, and it's a really, really good story to share. any questions I can answer about that recent rating process?
Commissioners?
No questions, just big applause.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's great. It was fun to be able to share that news with our Waputa peers as well. And so good job. Thank you very much, Heather. So you've been in the job for over a month now. So now the kid gloves are off. We can just be really tough on you. And,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good job, and I'm glad you've had this interim time to work together and learn, and we're just glad you're there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Excited for the opportunity.
Kirk, back to you.
Okay. I'll just reinforce just the extreme appreciation I have for Kelly and her team with Debbie and Heather and Sarah, and just this transition is one that I certainly would like to replicate elsewhere in the district. It's just been great to be able to have somebody of Debbie's caliber and Heather and Sarah working and supporting, and then to have the caliber of Heather to be able to step right in and not miss a beat. It's certainly, I think, something that we'll be looking for trying to duplicate elsewhere. So appreciate all the work there on the finance and treasury team. Next item I've got is one with Tracy Yunt and Bob Shane, just to give an update on Broadband Community Project Fund. So I think we're starting with Tracy.
Yep, that's right. Hello again. Wanted to share a little bit about what we're starting to see with a steep increase in grant funding opportunities, both at the state and the federal levels, and for the federal funds that are going to flow in through the state. We've got the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2022 that just went through, the Infrastructure Investment Job Act, other appropriations. There's a lot of funding sources, and there's going to be several opportunities where we could go and look for monies. Kirk has helped, focused us in four primary areas to begin with, where we're going to look initially, and that's around broadband, hydropower dam safety, second source water, and wildfire mitigation. There may be other opportunities that come up, but those are some of the initial focus areas we're looking at. So a lot of people involved at the district to pursue ideas and to pursue these grant opportunities. So Suzanne Grissel spent some time over the last several weeks putting together a process to help coordinate and evaluate our collective efforts to explore these opportunities. Primarily, where appropriate, even before the grant is fully formed, is how can we engage in the formative stages of grants? How do we consistently evaluate grant projects? And then what's the process to make sure that we put our thoughts together and decide whether or not even to apply, and then develop a winning application, and then successfully implement the grant through compliance, because there's always things we have to report on if we do get a grant. So one thing that's come up, and I just want to point out, as part of this process, we've begun to catalog specific grant obligations that may impact our ability to pursue certain opportunities. We want to make sure we understand as early as we can what each grant requires us to do initially through the grant process, and then long term before we pull the trigger and pursue the grant and actually accept the money. So a lot of good process that Suzanne has helped outline to make sure we put a little structure to how we approach all these and all the good work that we've been doing over the last several years. So Bob actually is going to chat a little about the first grant opportunity we'd like to bring up in the broadband area. Bob?
Thank you, Tracy. Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. First of all, I want to show appreciation to Congresswoman Kim Schreier, who went ahead and appropriated some funds to Chelan County PUD. The area that we are considering specifically is the Upper Eniat River Valley Road, if I said that right, which is the last section of the Eniat River Valley Road that goes from Ardenvohr to the town of Brief. That's roughly 12 miles, 220 premises would be in the scope of that project. Chelan PD would offer up gigabit service, so that's outstanding speed for those customers up in that area. That funding is coming through the Consolidated Appropriations Act under the USDA RUS Reconnect Program. We are considering, as Tracy had highlighted, the ramifications of accepting such a grant. We specifically asked for about $1.7 million for that bill. We were awarded about $1.2 million, so we're a little bit short on what we had asked for. That cost is specifically for the construction of fiber to 220 premises up there. Did not include any make-ready work tied to that. So it's a portion of what the fund would be to build out and serve that area. The cost per premise is around $7,800, which is approximately twice of what we charge, or I'm sorry, pay for the current public power benefit build area. So this particular area is outside of scope of the public power benefit program that we have in place now. So this would be in addition to that program. Again, it's from basically Ardenvohr to the end of the road, electrical system, which is the town of Brief. So that's really that area that we're speaking about. We are looking at doing our due diligence to make sure that if we were to make recommendation for approval, we really want to understand all of the ramifications of accepting that grant funding. Pretty high level, but if there's any questions you have for me or Tracy, we'd love to hear it.
Any questions?
Bob, what are you seeing as downside?
Well, there's provisions in the grant that we really want to understand in terms of what it puts the district at risk in terms of its asset. One of the things we are looking at is there is basically an ownership of those assets for the life of the program. So we want to make sure that we're comfortable with that as a district. So we have all the smart people looking at those terms and conditions, that being one of those. The other would be the additional fund it would take to complete the build. So we asked for 1.7, we potentially received 1.2, so there's a delta there that we'd have to find the funding to do that. And then with all programs, we're concerned about supply chain issues. So as you know, materials are more difficult to get. So within the terms of the contract, we want to make sure that if we committed, we could receive the materials and get the construction completed within the time frame identified in the terms and conditions, which we don't truly understand quite yet. We're still looking into that. So those are some of the operational things that we're concerned about. That's a very rural area, which would be, I think, I guarantee they'd be very appreciative of bringing fiber up into that area. But those are realistic issues we have, supply chain, the timing of the construction, tied back to ownership of the assets during the life, the composite economic life of the equipment that we'd want to take a look at.
Okay, yeah, and thank you for that, because if my memory's right, and that's always questionable, X number of years ago, I think we accepted a RUS grant, about, what, $30 million? And when we, you know, got into the whole process, it was not even possible to complete the permitting process before the construction date terminated. And we would have been left holding the bag. And so as much as I would like to see, you know, Ardenvohr up completed, I appreciate the caution because it's not always what it appears to be. Not by anybody's deception, just by how things are structured. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that comment.
All right. Well, without other comment, I appreciate the update, guys. Thanks for the effort.
That's all I have for manager items.
Okay, we have about 15 more minutes, so I would like to go ahead and get started on commission items. And let's get item A, the Confluence Parkway open house completed. We need a motion on that so that we can be in attendance together as a group for that open house. Two of them on March 30th.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion to move to set two public outreach meetings regarding Confluence Parkway on Wednesday, March 30th, 2022, one at 11 a.m. and a second at 4:30 p.m. to be held at Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, Washington.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Randy. Any further discussion on this? Commissioners, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Against? Motion passes. Okay, moving on. I just want to let you know I had a very productive meeting with our mayor the other day about Confluence Parkway. Gave me the opportunity to represent, you know, any of our questions or concerns, commissioners, with the mayor. You know, anytime money falls in your lap much faster than you ever expected it, it speeds the process up. And so we talked about that we've been moving along at a certain pace, and then all of a sudden the city's moving 100 miles an hour because they've been very successful at fundraising and getting their money in order. Surprised the city as well. So good news for them, and appreciate their diligence in due diligence and getting questions answered. So I just shared that with the mayor that regardless of however fast financing's coming in and timelines are being set, we need to, as commissioners, go through a process. We're very clear what our role is, what decisions we have to make, do our due diligence on that, get our questions answered fully as part of that process, and really do what we do at the PUD, and that's to talk to our customer owners to find out their direction and their wishes. Mayor was very understanding of that and committed to working to get our any and all questions answered to the best of their ability, which I let him know we appreciated. I also let the mayor know that our commission board of directors represents the community, and that just as our community is diverse, we have people in the community that are going to be completely for this project. We're going to have people that are going to be completely against the project, and we're going to have customer owners that are going to be in the middle that want us to do due diligence for our park, for the people who attend the park, for our nature preserve and the animals there to make sure they're protected, and yet to also do our due diligence to be good partners with our partners, our city partners, in trying to solve the challenges of congestion. So it was a very appropriate conversation. I told the mayor that we were committed to this process to do our due diligence, to get our questions answered, to ask the correct questions, or to ask all of our questions, and to be clear on what decisions we are going to be asked to make as a PUD. I was unable to attend the city's open house this last Saturday, but Kirk and Michelle were able to attend, and engage with community on that. And so with that, Rachel and I will be on the radio tomorrow talking about the Constance Parkway. And I also am moving forward to work with Kirk that there is a time in each study session in our next forward moving, in our moving forward with our board meetings, our commission meetings, that we will set aside time in each meeting to get our questions answered, to have presentations made to us, to do our studying, to do our due diligence to the best of our ability. And we will take as long as we need to get those questions answered, but we will be starting right away on that. So just wanted to throw that out there and see if you have any guidance for Kirk and I, but that's the direction that I will be taking on due diligence. Any comments or questions on that?
Steve, this is Ann. I have a couple of comments. First of all, thank you for that. I'm really happy to hear that this is going to become a standing item on our agenda. Clearly, we commissioners are all now fully engaged in this issue, and I'm happy to hear you share with our mayor that that we're going to take our time and do this right, and so appreciate that. Appreciate your comments, and I can share. I'll just do my check-in here. I have received lots of feedback since the article in the newspaper. And as you said, it has been it's been 180 degrees for the proposal as it stands, and 180 degrees against it. So this is going to be interesting. I know there are a lot of good people, smart people working on this, and they all want to do the right thing, as we do. So we'll do our very best, and we really, really encourage, if we have people out there listening, we really encourage you to give us your input. Thanks for giving me the time.
You're welcome. All right. Commissioners, anything else you want to share? Gary? Oh, sorry, Ray.
Thanks,
I'll
Steve.
Back to you. Gary, go ahead.
I just would like to share with my fellow commissioners that over the weekend, as we pondered some of the additional thoughts, and I went back to reflect on a book that was kindly provided to all the commissioners called The Fearless Organization. And it really is a very helpful book. I thank the commission for providing it to certainly to me. But there was a study discovering a psychological safety. This is the author of the book, Edmondson, Amy Edmondson, who was saying that high-performing teams all seem to have this skill set with respect to psychological safety during their interaction on extremely difficult subjects and subject matter. So I just wanted to thank the commission for making that available, and for anyone who's interested, pull that book off the shelf and dust it off, take a look at it. It's really very helpful during this process. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. And again, I reinforced that concept with the mayor that regardless of whatever anybody's expectations are on us, we will be voting according to what our community wants, and we're a diverse board, we're a diverse community, and to expect that kind of a vote, you know, we're going to agree and disagree and work forward on a very difficult subject, but we're committed to having a psychologically safe environment for not only us to work in and agree and disagree, but as well as our community and staff. So it's really important, Gary. I appreciate that and that reinforcement. Randy?
Yeah, I'm shifting gears entirely, you know, since we're on commissioner items.
Great.
I don't know how many have read this morning's update on PUD history from Willard Fields. I believe, and I'm not looking at it, so I'm going from memory, but I think this morning he said in 1909, Cashmere set their electric rates at $1 a month plus 12 cents a kilowatt hour.
12 cents.
For up to 25 kilowatt hours per month. And I'm sitting here, I'm amazed in many different ways on where we've been as an electric industry here in Chelan County. The fact that today our monthly rate is substantially higher than the $1, but our electric rate sure as heck has dropped over the last 113 years. It's really amazing. So that just from the Cashmere perspective.
That's great. Thanks, Randy. Okay. Other commissioners, Gary.
Thanks. I have one more item, and thank you, Randy, for your comments, because it sort of joggled my memory here. That I read an interesting article here recently, and what it did is it drew a parallel between the current price of gasoline and diesel fuel to the increased demand for electric vehicles, and took that one step further and said that this demand has caused the entire electric grid to now be challenged, and that the speed with which the conversion is going from combustion engines to electric vehicles has increased dramatically as a result of not only the current price of fuel, but also what appears experts are saying will be the future price of fuel. So those of us that are in the utility industry providing electricity should perhaps take note of the fact that there might be a seismic shift occurring with the electrification of transportation, and what that might just not be temporary. It might be a long-term impact. So interesting article. I just wanted to share that with my fellow commissioners and with Kirk.
Kirk, can I just say, I just want to, let Commissioner Arsenault know we are, part of the strategic plan is to evaluate distributed energy management software, and that tying in public, and private charging is one of the key components that feeds that system. So we are fully aware, when I first got here, people were like, it's not going to happen in Chelan, but, with our cost of electricity, I didn't believe that and proceeded to take steps to move us forward in that process.
Thanks, Sean.
Dennis, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, just a comment. I agree with Commissioner Arsenault, with an exception that we need to, I think, really, as we position ourselves perhaps collectively, that there's a current representation in Europe about the dependency on foreign energy. If you take a look at Germany and its dependency on Russian gas and petroleum, and that places the United States in a compromised energy position. And, I guess it's a plea to, as we look toward alternative fuels, to consider perhaps wider implications rather than what might be just beneficial for Chelan County. So there's my plea. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Okay, it is now 12:01. I believe it's time to take a recess. We will come back and talk about follow-up on delegation items and delegation of action items and move into executive session after that. So we, at this time, will recess. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the March 21st, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. How are we doing with attendees? I see Dennis. I think I see Ann's number there.
Yes.
And Gary and Randy. I think we're good to go. I'd like to just follow up on commission items. Is there anything, commissioners, that we have left to cover? Okay. Follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meeting.
Yeah, we've got a few items from the March 7th board meeting. Actually, we've got one left, but that was Sean Smith will determine the resources required to add the Lake Chelan and Canadian snow pack forecast to the current app. And I'd like to see if we can remove this one, but I'll do whatever the board would like. We have a list of proposed improvements for the current app that we have ongoing, and we're proposing to do a quarterly review of those improvements and prioritize the improvements, and that snow forecast is one of those that's on the list. So if that's acceptable to the board, we'll just move forward that way. If you'd like to keep it on here, we're fine with keeping it on here.
Commissioners? I'm fine with your direction.
Okay. Great.
I'm seeing heads up from everybody else.
Okay. Thank you. And then second one from that meeting was Bob Shane provided the VLAN rate changes and their impacts to school. He provided that same day, March 7th. And we had three items from the board workshop. First one was for Eric and I to pursue preliminary discussions with a consultant to help us look at educating ourselves more on innovation management. We actually have, Eric and I have a 1 hour time scheduled with one of those consultants coming up. Commissioners, we're going to send any questions they had on Confluence Parkway that they would like to have answered to Rebecca and Commissioner McKenna, and I've seen all those roll in, and we'll keep that as a standing list. I suspect there'll be new questions that pop up, so we'll keep that as an active document. And then Eric is going to meet with Commissioner McKenna and Commissioner Congdon on reviewing the board governance policies for proposed edits for the fall workshop. So those are all the items we had from the previous meetings.
Great. And then delegation of action items from today?
We had one, and that was for Rebecca to schedule any of the commissioners that would like to go out and visit the Rocky Reach facilities.
Okay. Commissioners, did we miss anything? Okay. So at this time, I will open up for additional public comment. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented or anything that they would like to address. Just remember to please state your name and address for the record. This is being recorded. And please limit your comments to 3 minutes. So do we have any public comment today? Rebecca, are you seeing anything?
No, I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. Are there any other matters that may of general business that may be necessarily come before the commission today? Okay, seeing none, we are going to now move into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110 to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price is authorized by RCW 42.30.110 to plan the strategy or position to be taken during the course of collective bargaining is authorized by RCW 42.30.140 and to review the performance of a public employee is authorized by RCW 42.30.110. This time we will be moving into executive session. Thank you very much.
Commissioner McKenna, I think we need to state a time frame.
Oh.
And our thinking is 90 minutes.
Okay. And we will be back in 90 minutes. Thank you very much. We are coming out of executive session. It is Monday, March 21st, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.